finger on the beat of the issues that matter to you. If you're curious about the latest news in Canadian politics, labor, environment, or social justice, you've come to the right place. This is News for the Rest of Us, free of corporate influence. This week on Rabble Radio, Rabble Assistant Editor Georgia Kelly sits down with Elsa Perry and Rebecca Hansen of Shelter Movers. Shelter Movers is a Canadian organization which helps survivors of gender-based violence transition to a better, safer life. Shelter Movers collaborates with local businesses and community services who refer clients that have decided to leave an abuser and have a safer place to go. Shelter Movers makes all the arrangements to move and store survivors' belongings securely on the client's terms. The organization seeks to empower survivors as they transition to a life free of violence. Here are Georgia Kelly, Elsa Perry, and Rebecca Hansen in conversation. Take a listen.
Okay. Hi, Elsa. Hi, Rebecca. Thanks so much for taking the time to speak with me today.
Hi, Georgia. Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you so much.
You're both chapter directors for Shelter Movers. Rebecca, you're the chapter director for Edmonton. Elsa, you're for Calgary. And I'd love to talk more about the specifics of what you guys do. But before we dive into that, I'd like to talk a bit more generally about gender-based violence. If you can give maybe a broad definition of what gender-based violence is and who your clients are.
So gender-based violence is violence that is perpetrated against someone because of their gender, their gender expression, their gender identity. This can be a violation of their human rights when they're targeted for those reasons. We hear of lots of different terms in the sector, such as domestic violence, family violence, dating violence. And really, these all kind of fall under that term of gender-based violence in terms of what we're speaking of today.
Maybe you could talk a little bit more about like what it looks like in practice, maybe some patterns that you see.
Yeah, so some of the things that come along with gender-based violence would be emotional violence, a coercive control that happens within relationship dynamics. It can be physical violence, it could be sexual violence, it could be financial abuse. There are a lot of different ways that people experience gender-based violence. It could be one of those things, or it could be a combination of many of those things.
And just to add, I think Rebecca's super right about that, that often when we think of gender-based violence, we tend to think of physical violence as being the primary form, but it's often much more complicated than that. And there's a ton of different, as Rebecca said before, mental, financial, and other types of abuse that do correlate with the gender-based violence definition.
So when someone comes to you asking for, Shelter Movers assistance, where are they coming from? What situation are they in?
So to begin with, we are working with specific referral partners while we are able to build up the capacity of our volunteers in order to expand services and support more and more families that are experiencing gender-based violence. So the initial partnership for that in Edmonton is the Wynn House shelters. They have three of them here, both emergency and transitional shelter. And usually if they're needing our services, they have been affected by experienced gender-based violence or are living in a home where there is gender-based violence and they need to get out for safety reasons.
Yeah, and more broadly, like our clients, they're individuals, families that are fleeing abuse. And so primarily we do tend to serve women and children, but they can be referred to us by referral partners, what Rebecca talked about. So for Calgary, we have the Rowan House Society, which is located in High River. And then we also partnered with Fear Is Not Love, which is located in Calgary. And so people are often referred to us through these agencies. Often they are women's shelters, but in the past, we've also received referrals from policing agencies, local businesses, community services as well, quite a wide variety of organizations to make sure that that referral process goes as smoothly as possible.
And as for other organizations you partner with, I saw that you also partner with, is it moving companies?
This is a really good question. We collaborate with local businesses, community agencies. We have a huge variety of partners. I always like to direct people to our website, sheltermovers.com, because we list them in great detail. We have everyone's logos because we are really enthusiastic to be part of these partnerships. And we have tons of national, local chapter partners who do support us in making this work possible. So we do provide these services free of cost, and it's because of these amazing partners that we're able to do so. Some partners I can give quick shout outs, Bluebird Storage, Big Steel Box, Mini Mall Storage, Pocket Storage. We already talked about our referral partners as well, which are huge partnerships within Shelter Movers. We also partner with local police, RCMP. We also have private security firms, Guard World, Max Security Services, Vinaya Guarding. And we also, a big part of moving, as we all know, are car rentals and trucks and minivans and things like that. So we do also have amazing car rental partnerships. Avis, Penske, Enterprise are just some that we've partnered with here in Calgary and Edmonton.
Some of the community partners that we have are other agencies that are supporting survivors of gender-based violence, such as victim services, and then community agencies as well. And then some of the bigger agencies or coalitions that have been helping us get the word out are organizations such as the Community Initiatives Against Family Violence and the Alberta LGBTQ Plus Chamber of Commerce.
Now, you've alluded a bit to the referral process for clients who are looking for help, but maybe you could walk me through the process of, you have a client who needs your services. Maybe if you could just walk me through like what that process looks like from start to finish.
So usually they would access services, that referral, through a referral partner. If they self-refer, we try to connect them with a referral partner to make sure that they are really supported all along the way throughout the entire process, and so that they're not having to retell their story over and over and over again, which could be traumatizing. So in the beginning, we have intake coordinators that do that initial intake. Then the moves get planned through move coordination. And then part of that intake process is assessing risk and then mitigating risk, putting safety measures into place so that the move is as safe as possible for the clients, for the volunteers, for staff, for anyone that's involved up to and on the day of the move. And then, of course, based on the security risk, then we would look at including other partners for security. So potentially private security or policing, depending on that risk.
Yeah, and to add a little bit to that response, I always like to say our volunteers are amazing. And so like that intake process is really our superpower, because that's when we all come into action and we assess the move. We get as much information as possible. As Rebecca said before, we don't accept self-referrals, but we work closely with these referral agencies to make sure that we get as much detail as possible in order to plan the move. So once we get that intake form, then essentially that move coordinator gets all of the volunteers who are ready to help move and to help drive, and it's a call to action. And so they all sign up for a move of the date and time. And then that move, Rebecca said this, it's dangerous to move occasionally depending on the risk. So we make sure that we really know what that risk is. And we have our different levels, low, medium, and high risk, to make sure that those volunteers and the client themselves are safe. And so often that does involve having private security firms or RCMP present on site to make sure that everything goes smoothly. But often sometimes we also do moves from shelters to their new locations. And those are usually lovely moves where we can make sure that everyone's excited. This is a new place. We're moving their belongings back. We're going to that storage locker with them. We're unloading those boxes with them. And it's a really positive, awesome experience for us and our volunteers, as well as we really try hard to make sure that it's that way for the client. And when the move is done, we like to really make sure Shelter Movers really, we thrive off feedback. We're very adaptable. So we make sure that if the client wants to, we get a testimonial from them about things that worked and things that didn't work, so that we're always making sure that we're staying up to date with trauma-informed practices and doing the most ethical and safe services that we possibly can.
Just so I have it clear, Shelter Movers, you help folks who are going from homes to shelters, from shelters to new homes. Is there anything I'm missing there?
Yeah, so we provide a variety of services. One is it could be transporting them from their home that they were in to shelter. helping them move their belongings and then putting them into storage while they are in shelter. Once they have secured housing, then we would help them move their stuff from storage and then into their new home. The other piece that would be assessed during the intake process is if there are any other specific needs that need to be met in order for the client to be able to leave. So one of those could be if they have pets, do they need access to a pet fostering service? Then we may provide that connection for them to be able to make sure that their pets are safe too, so that they can move and leave and really be at peace of mind, knowing that their pets are safe and that they're not going to essentially be losing a member of their family.
Yeah. Okay, great. And I want to ask you about the volunteers that help out, because as I understand it, the whole organization is volunteer run, right?
A large percentage is for sure volunteer run. We have our core staff, but we are very proud. We are very volunteer powered, and we really carefully recruit those volunteers. We screen them, we train them so that they can provide our services, the free moving and storage, at no cost to those individuals. And we also don't charge the volunteers for this really specialized training as well. We're trauma informed. We don't re-traumatize, and we really make sure that our volunteers really have that shelter movers mission and value along their entire process. And so people really enjoy that. I think a lot of us really are looking for ways to give back to our communities. And sometimes it's not an easy pathway. And so shelter movers, for me, I really like how tangible it is, where you can physically participate if you'd like. You can be a mover, you can be a driver. We're always looking for movers and drivers. But if perhaps like your schedule doesn't allow for that, or you have different abilities, we have so many different roles that we can recruit for: admin morals, grant writers. We already mentioned intake coordinators and move coordinators. A lot of these are part-times. We're really flexible and we're adaptable. And it's really great that Calgary and Edmonton are opening these chapters. It gives a wide variety of roles for people to choose. And if they're not located particularly in a city center, like, that doesn't matter. We're still happy to have you. There's tons of remote roles. We do a lot of our stuff pretty hybrid. So yeah, there's the move day where we're boots on the ground moving stuff. But then there's also the entire planning procedures, event planning and other stuff that we do. So we're happy to have people where they're at, and we're happy to train them. If any listeners are interested in volunteering, we're always looking for volunteers. I always have to let people know to look on sheltermovers.com for volunteer opportunities. Take a look at the Calgary and Edmonton pages. If you're interested in making a difference in your community and you can get outside, you can get onto your computer, we're happy to have you.
So let's hone in on the movers for a second. What does the training process look like for them?
So for the mover training process, as I said, we carefully recruit, we carefully screen, and we do provide the training. And so it's different depending on what role you want to do. But if you want to be a mover, our volunteer service managers are happy to have you. And you do a general orientation, but then also more specific training to what is trauma. Not a lot of us know what trauma is and what it can look like. So we want to make sure that people are really aware of gender-based violence as a issue across Canada, especially in Alberta, what it looks like, and how we can train them to provide our services from this client-centered lens as well. And so for movers, we also partner with tons of moving companies as well that are offering to teach us how to properly move fridges. Like, I don't know how to move a fridge. It's heavy, it's awful, but now I know properly with ratchet straps and dollies. Like, it's great. So you protect the volunteer, you learn something new. And sometimes these events can be really fun where these companies do train us, especially if you want to be a driver as well. We're always looking for drivers, but sometimes, I mean, I don't know how to drive a huge moving truck, but it's great that I can get that training when it's offered. And then I have a new skill set that not only can I help shelter movers with, but also now I know how to drive a huge truck. That's pretty good.
Now, you mentioned before that sometimes the moves can be risky. You said there's three levels of risk. Maybe you could tell me a little bit more about that. What kind of risks can be involved in the moving process?
The type of risk is really assessed right from the beginning at the intake process. And then ongoing assessments are being done all through the planning process as well. And then, of course, even on the day of the actual move, we're continuing to monitor those risks and make sure that we have the appropriate safety measures in place. So a low risk move, which is generally a resettlement move where we are helping the client and their children, pets, if they have them, to take their belongings that have been in storage and move them into their new place. In that situation, generally the abuser is unaware of either location, and that categorizes it as a low risk move. So we wouldn't need security or police present in those cases. A medium risk move would be a move that we would have a private security guard in uniform present during the move, just to make sure that everything is taking place safely and volunteers, clients, any staff that are present all feel safe and they're able to get everything done and then move on. High risk moves are moves that we would for sure have police or RCMP present. Those are cases where there may have been charges in either direction for any kind of charge, assault charges. It could be no contact orders that are in place. It could be that there are known weapons or gang involvement. So really we make sure that we have police involved for those kind of moves. But with the careful planning and risk mitigation that is put into place, we make sure that it's really a safe move and that it's coordinated at a time that is the safest to make it happen. With almost 6,000 moves that have been completed across the country, we've been able to complete all of those moves safely and not once have had any kind of physical altercation take place on a move. If something did escalate, we would leave the move and replan for another day if we were able to do so in a safe manner.
Why is it important for people who are fleeing gender-based violence or have been displaced? Why is it important to provide help with their personal belongings as you do?
So I could answer that one based on my own personal experience. I did work for 7 years in the gender-based violence sector working in a shelter. And so I was able to see firsthand what clients experience when they're having to leave these abusive situations and what the barriers are for them. So some of those barriers are financial barriers. Moving is really expensive. Storage is really expensive. Renting vehicles and moving trucks is really expensive. Getting the help can be really difficult, especially if you need to do it with urgency or in a situation where people don't want to get involved. Even what got me into this work in the beginning is my own personal lived experience with gender-based violence. And, you know, I can really testify to how much I would have appreciated having these kind of services when I was in that situation. It can be so stressful to have to leave a relationship, to have to do it with urgency. And then you add on all these other factors that come with moving to begin with. It can be humiliating to have to ask people for help, to have to beg people to help you. And one of the barriers that comes with that, the reason why it makes it so difficult, is because often in abusive relationships, as was in my case, isolation is a really key piece of the abuse that happens in that relationship. So you start to lose those connections with family and friends that normally you would have relied on you for support. In my case, my ex had gone on a distortion campaign to every person that I knew, and that made it really difficult because then people didn't want to get involved and getting help was really, really hard. So important. And then when you add the fact that shelters generally have a 1 or 2 bag limit to the amount of belongings that they can bring because they have such limited space, you have to pick and choose what you're going to bring and what you're not going to bring. And it's not just you, it's your kids. You've got important documents, you've got medications, you've got clothing, and then toys and bedding and pictures and that little note that your kid wrote to you when they're in kindergarten. So there are so many important factors, and shelter movers being able to step in there and provide these services in a safe way for people to be able to get their belongings really removes a lot of the barriers for them to be able to transition to a life free from violence.
Your organization is expanding. As I understand, you just recently expanded into, was it Edmonton?
Yeah, we are expanding. Shelter Movers We have been expanding our services in response to the rise in gender-based violence across Canada. The organization has been particularly active thus far in Eastern Canada and BC. And now that we've expanded our operations into Alberta, so there's a chapter in Edmonton, and there's also a chapter in Calgary. And it was really honestly due to the province's concerning statistics for gender-based violence. We have twice the national average of gender-based violence within this province. Currently, for these chapters, we're setting up our processes, we're doing our collaborations and our partnerships. That's really our main focus right now. Because as we all know, we have to really lay these foundations right to be able to provide our service safely and reliably to our clients. We are planning to start accepting clients' referrals as soon as we have this power to do so, and we're very close. So again, if you're willing to volunteer, sheltermovers.com, we're happy to have you. And this is part of an announcement that happened in December of 2022, where Shelter Movers received funding from Women and Gender Equality Canada, also known as WAGE, or it's called the Prairie Scale Up Project. So this funding is amazing because it's really helping to expand Shelter Movers' cost-free services across the prairies. And Alberta is just the start. With this generous support of WAGE, that we can recruit, we can train, and we can deploy more volunteers, including movers and drivers, to really carry out our mission as a non-for-profit.
I would add that we are so grateful for that WAGE funding to be able to get our chapters launched and up and running here. However, moving forward, we're still going to need funding to be able to continue to sustain operations so that we can provide this valuable service. So many people, especially in communities like ours with such high rates of gender-based violence, are affected by gender-based violence. There's very few that are not affected, either directly or indirectly, through someone that they know. So people really want to be able to give back and want to know how they can help. So as was mentioned, volunteering is one way that they can help. And we really need those volunteers to be able to provide this service. And those who are not able to volunteer, there are other ways that they can be involved and that they can support Shelter Movers in providing the service to survivors. On the website, it shows a lot of different ways that ones can give to Shelter Movers and support it financially. Just $250 is enough to support a move, to move a family to safety. Other ways that they could support too is getting the word out there. If you can't volunteer, maybe you know somebody who can. Shelter Movers Edmonton and Shelter Movers Calgary have just recently launched their own Facebook pages. So if people can go on there and like and share it, get the word out so that those who can volunteer are able to sign up and do so, that in itself is much appreciated and really goes a long way to our recruitment.
Thank you again, Elsa and Rebecca. I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with me and for sharing your experience.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
That was Assistant Editor Georgia Kelly and Elsa Perry and Rebecca Hansen of Shelter Movers in conversation. Thanks so much for that, Elsa, Rebecca, and Georgia. For volunteer opportunities with Shelter Movers, please visit www.sheltermovers.com/volunteer. Switching gears now, here's Rabble editor Nick Seabrook to catch us up on the top news stories of the week on rabble.ca in a segment we like to call In Case You Missed It. Take it away, Nick.
Thanks, Brianne. This week in Canadian politics, national politics reporter Scott Martin examines Saskatchewan Premier Scott Moe and Education Minister Dustin Duncan's new policies for schools that specifically target 2S LGBTQIA+ students. Earlier this week, it was announced that Saskatchewan schools are now required to seek parent or guardian permission when changing the preferred name and pronouns used by students under the age of 16 in school. Duncan's announcement was packaged with two other policies. The first requires parents to be informed about the sexual health curriculum and have the option to decline their child's participation. The other requires boards of education to sever ties with third-party organizations connected to sexual health education. This comes in the months following a similar move by Blaine Higgs, New Brunswick's Conservative Premier. Earlier this summer, Higgs updated the provincial educational policy to deny the request of any child under the age of 16 to change their pronouns or name without explicit parental consent. Higgs's policy took effect on July 1st. This week in feminist news, columnist Charlotte Dalwood outlines a newly recognized tort in the Alberta court system, which allows people to sue others for harassment. A tort is a legally recognized grievance that a person can use as a basis on which to sue someone. This new tort was created when an Alberta court recognized online harassment as something for which a person can be sued. Alberta Health Inspector Sarah Nunn successfully sued online talk show host Kevin Johnston after it was found that Johnston repeatedly harassed Nunn over her enforcement of public health orders during the COVID-19 pandemic. The court found that Johnston knew that his behavior was unwelcomed by Nunn, impugned her reputation, and caused harm to her career and her personal safety. With all of this in mind, should we start suing TERFs? Dalwood writes, quote, "For trans people like myself, who are all too often the subject of terrible harassment online, it means we can take legal action against the trans-exclusionary radical feminists, or TERFs, who orchestrate that harassment. It means that we can seek justice and have a shot at winning." End quote. In labor news, the Manitoba General Employees Union, or MGEU for short, is fighting for fair wages for its workers, while the government wants to restrict them to a 2% pay increase. Liquor workers employed by Manitoba Liquor and Lotteries, who are represented by the MGEU, started strike action on August 8, citing wages as a significant issue at the bargaining table. While not an officially announced policy, the evidence of a restrictive 2% wage mandate is also evident at the bargaining table for workers at Manitoba Public Insurance. Adding insult to injury, the wage mandate imposed on public sector workers is not being enforced fairly, Rabble reporter Gabriela Kaluge-Kasuga reports. Premier Heather Stephenson's government reached a tentative agreement with doctors that included an 18% increase over 4 years. At the same time, Stephenson and her cabinet ministers accepted a 3.3% wage increase. It's become clear that the Stephenson government's wage mandate is flexible, but only for some folks. Folks like the premier, cabinet, doctors, and typically those making six figures. For frontline workers, 2% is as good as it gets, said MGEU President Kyle Ross on the union website. To read the full version of these stories and much, much more, visit rabble.ca.
Rabble.ca shares news for the rest of us. We believe news for the rest of us is about creating a more informed and connected world. Help Rabble.ca make quality, progressive news and views accessible to all. Become a Rabble Rouser today and support us during our summer fundraiser with a one-time or monthly donation.
And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thanks as always for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on Rabble.ca, and thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Brianne Doyle, and I'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
Starting from the week of Monday, May 30th, the Student Union Building is open 7 days a week from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. The sub-building common spaces, along with the bookable spaces, are available for use. Any comments or questions, please go to the Simon Fraser Student Society website at sfss.ca for more information.